Hello and welcome to another episode of The Curriculum, a podcast from Cornerstones Education. We do our best to provide advice, insight and information for primary school leaders and teachers, all in the time it takes to get to work or grab a quick cuppa.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of The Curriculum, a podcast by Cornerstones Education. My name is Melanie Moore and I'm your host, and I'm speaking today to Caroline Pudner, who is a primary school teacher and a consultant here at Cornerstone. So good afternoon, Caroline.
Good afternoon, Mel.
It's lovely to have you here. Today we're going to be talking about the importance of curriculum coherence, and it sounds like a very staid phrase, but it is a very important aspect of curriculum design. And we're also going to think about some of the challenges that designing coherent curriculum brings, some of the benefits when you get it right, and to start to touch on some possible tips and solutions for making sure that schools are designing curriculum which is coherent. So there's quite a lot to get through there.
There is.
Are you ready for it?
Ready.
So let's just begin at the beginning and tell me why this is such an important issue.
I think coherence in the curriculum has always been important, but there's an awful lot written about it at the moment. Ofsted are really focusing on this. They're already asking schools about it. But a big report's just come out by Policy Exchange, written by John Blake, and there is a link to his full report and a summary that we've written, and all of that's on the website, so you can have a look at it in full. But just to say to listeners, the main points from this report are very key, and they seem to be saying that what they've found is there are inconsistencies across schools with how the national curriculum has been put into place and delivered in their school. And he points to lots of reasons for this. So one of them is that, you know, schools haven't had access necessarily to really good quality, coherent resources to deliver the curriculum. It could be for many different reasons. It could be they were focusing more on testing. So the main point of this report is that it's not getting implemented as well as it should have been.
Yeah, and I think having read the full report, there are some, I think, quite contentious and quite challenging bits of reading in there for schools and teachers, which maybe unpick a little bit later. But just tell me then what you understand the term coherent curriculum to mean.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're using the term. And I know when I look in Google, I thought, oh, I wonder how many people are searching for this term or what it means. And it's not really being used an awful lot, but actually coherence is everything. When you think of a child's journey from nursery to year six, there has to be coherence there. In terms of a curriculum, you're thinking of the curriculum as a whole. You have to consider the journey from the beginning to the end. There's got to be consistency. You know, it's got to be strong and unified whole. I mean, that's how I see it.
So is coherence different to progression then, or do you see that as the same thing? Are we just using another word for...
No, I think when you think progression, you always think about the outcome.
You're more about attainment.
Yeah, and I think that word's almost been used so much for that, and for levels and for learning. But coherence takes you into another arena where you're thinking of standing back from your curriculum and looking at
taking a good hard look at the bigger,
At the bigger
picture.
Topics, the themes, the principles, that kind of thing.
Okay, so let's just have a think then about some of the problems that teachers or even children might experience with facing a curriculum which doesn't have coherence. What does that look like for a teacher, and have you any experience of that?
I have. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Because I think a lot of teachers like me will have experienced so much change. I've been teaching for nearly 20 years, and it's just when you think you're getting into a coherent way of working, you know, things change.
Yeah, the curriculum changes, or there's a new strategy.
But what they're saying now is that this is completing the revolution. They're not going to make any... It's quite promising, you know. They're saying they're not going to make any big changes. So it is time, actually, to look. So going back to your question, I've had lots of experience where I have had maybe a short-term plan or a kind of sort of longer-term idea, but the thing with me as a teacher is that if the resources aren't in place and I've got to go scrambling around looking for the right resources to match what I'm trying to do, it takes so much time. It's hard. If I don't know what the big picture is, I don't know whether the things I'm choosing are necessarily the same as what another teacher might be using. It's very, very isolating, I think, not having a coherent plan as a school.
Yeah, and I also think, in my experience, you know, when I've gone into a school and you have teams of teachers who are trying to plan a curriculum for Key Stage 2 or a curriculum for Key Stage 1, obviously then you're not going to get that coherence between key stages. And I have seen a rise in sort of the role of curriculum leader or curriculum lead probably over the last 5 years, which I think schools have put in place to combat some of that sort of disjointedness. If that's a proper word, I'm not sure if it is, but you know
I know what you mean. That's what, and I think there are pockets of excellence. And the thing is, and the reports of this as well, you know, there's some amazing teaching going on, as we know, and there are pockets of real, you know, great planning, coherence across their year group. But like you just said, if a child's getting ad hoc experiences through school, then, you know, all right, Ofsted, but let's forget that for a while. Just think that's not a consistent experience for that child.
And I think it goes back to what you were saying at the beginning. It's about taking a step back and looking at that big picture. And sometimes head teachers and deputy head teachers, they don't have the time maybe to do that. When you're a class teacher, you're in there every day delivering, working with the children. So I think the role of curriculum lead is a really good acknowledgement in a school that you have somebody who is looking at the coherence across the whole school.
Yes, because it's not just about planning it, is it? It's about reviewing it and having a checklist and training teachers and collecting and investing in resources.
Yeah, and I think it's also saying this is important and we are going to allocate somebody to do that role. What about in terms of teacher workload? If your curriculum is not coherent, what happens?
I've spent hours, literally, probably days of my life. And I know a lot of listeners will feel, you know, if you're teachers out there, you'll know what I mean, where you just spend so long finding the right resource for your children. It might be roughly the right age group, but it's not really been planned for age-related expectations. So it has a massive impact on workload. And John Blake mentions that. He mentions that a lot, actually, in the report, that this is about investment. So, you know, if I worked for a school that had, you know, a coherent curriculum, hopefully that school, a curriculum leader, will have invested in resources that go alongside that, and so on and so forth. You know?
And it's interesting, we're talking about curriculum, and normally curriculum and resources would probably have been a separate issue. But actually what you're talking about is having a really good coherent plan for the content that's going to be delivered, the skills and the knowledge, but also with that, the resources which enable you to deliver it. So you're talking about the curriculum planning and the resources being part of the same development. Because, I mean, I'm right in saying that mostly teachers would plan or find their own resources. There's not really been sort of a coherence between the two.
Yeah, not really, unless you've got a really good sort of team of people and you're looking at, your half-term plan and you plot in ahead in a bigger team what resources you've got. But, you know, it doesn't always happen. Everyone's so busy. So it's about taking stock, like you just said, and doing it right from the beginning. I think people do worry that if they do the resources too far in advance, that things might not work out in the end. But I think you should maybe try and forget that and actually think, well, you know, weighing it up, isn't it better to have a general view, have some good textbooks or a good stock of good timelines, whatever it is, in place first, and then you can, you know, you can make little changes and edit, but it's much better than finding it the night before.
And what about, if we think about the benefits then, both for teachers and for children, of having that coherence in place, what would you sort of pick out as your top couple of benefits? Because there are many, but
there are lots, I mean, it's the flip side of what I've just said, the negatives, I suppose. So you get your time back, you've got more time to actually teach and question. And I think the beauty of a coherent curriculum, think of it as like a path, like you're going on a walk with the children from their whole journey through school. If that path is really well kept and clear, and you know what your aim is, and you know the feel of a school, the ethos, the principles of your curriculum, you can then afford to take little detours and go down little paths of curiosity or take them off, but you always come back to that path. So for me, it just gives that structure to a school and to my teaching. I think, you know, I've not been a head, but I'm sure that a head teacher with a coherent curriculum in place, once that, you know, that work is done, it just gives the school a good feeling as well. They're very proud, they're very clear about what their curriculum is.
And what about in terms of social mobility? Because I think that is mentioned quite a bit in the report. Mm. So how can a coherent curriculum, well-planned curriculum, enable children to be socially mobile?
It's really crucial, isn't it? Because I think it was Amanda Spielman was mentioning this about if you've got quality materials, quality curriculum with real breadth and balance and wonderful resources, no matter who you are, what background you have, when you go to school, you are accessing all of that and you're seeing the world. You're seeing what an amazing world this is. All the learning opportunities are there for you. So I think it's crucial.
And what about in terms of things like educational visits and partnerships? I mean, they become much easier, don't they, if your curriculum is coherent and well-planned and planned in advance.
Yeah, you're not thinking, oh no, I've got a trip next month, what am I going to do? No, it's all planned in, you know, ahead. And, you know, that again, it just enriches learning of having being planned in advance.
So we said at the beginning of the podcast we'd unpick some of the difficulties and some of the benefits. And we also said we'd have a think about some of the solutions. Listeners can read about this in a little bit more detail. But let's just think about some of the practical things that schools can do. Almost, you know, sort of quick fixes that schools can do. One of the major things is, I think, for schools just to go right back to the beginning and think about their curriculum vision and the pedagogic approach that they take. Because once everybody's agreed on the curriculum vision and the curriculum principles, then everything else should flow from that. And I often think once you're really strong on those, that also ekes out any distractions from the main sort of core of your work. Mm. And we do discuss, again, we've got another blog which looks at how you create curriculum principles and curriculum vision. But if we think about in terms of what teachers can do and what curriculum leads can do, can you sort of suggest your top three tips for, you know, getting started with that?
Sure. I think, you know, one of the first things you do is look at your long-term plans. So you can get a lot of coherence in that way. You can, for example, you can map out key concepts, things like, for any subject, but things like field work for geography. And that's mapped out across all the year groups. So it's quite a simple map. But at a glance, a subject leader or anyone really can see the experience of a child through school in that particular subject.
And you could do that. You could do that in staff meeting time. You could do that just circulating that around school and a curriculum lead, you know, collect those in and have a look at the progression, the coherence and where the gaps are.
Yes, exactly. And only doing that can you see the gaps. And I'm sure there are lots of subject leaders who already put these in place. But what I like is how it would link then to what you said about the coherent curriculum first, getting your principles right. If your principles are environment and your community, then that would come through in those key concepts. You'd make sure they do field work regularly or, you know, do environmental work. So it really, it's still the same story.
And I think it's also important, isn't it, that you can see sort of the cyclical nature of a curriculum as well.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, so how many times do we do field work and when is it revisited and how do we build on it? And how many times do we do painting and how many times do we revisit it? And how do we give children a good spread of artistic genres?
That's right.
So all of that picture emerges just by doing that really sort of quite simple.
Yeah, it
task.
Is simple. But what I think the thing the school have a conversation about is what are the concepts we want the children to experience. Obviously the national curriculum gives you the rig, it gives you the essential coverage, but you could think field work, that's important to
and
us
go back to those principles and think if we want to be an environmentally friendly school and we want to teach children about the world around them, we need to make sure that we have this coherently across.
Yeah, and you won't be enough to just to say you do that and that you're an eco school or whatever it is that your thing is. Yeah, you need to map it out. So that's that, the first one.
I think you're going to put an example podcast of that.
I mean, it's just an example. Obviously, schools wouldn't necessarily be able to pick up and use it, but it just shows you how you can map out main concepts. And then looking at lessons, you know, there's a movement away now from detailed lesson planning.
Hallelujah.
I know. I remember I did a two-pager once. And you just don't use it. But anyway, I shouldn't be saying that.
No, I think you're quite right. I think a lot of people will be agreeing with you.
Yeah, it got scribbled all over. So it's a welcome change. But rather than sort of forget planning, it's all about sequences of planning. Again, that's coherent as well, isn't it, in action? So it's looking at...
The series of lessons.
I think you said another time, it's like a story. You know, think of the story that you're telling, really, with that subject, if it's the Victorians or whatever it is, where you want your children to start, where you want them to end. And, you know, you can deviate a little bit, but I think that's very important for coherence. And then finally, and really, really importantly, we touched on it before, is resources. So you can have a fantastic curriculum, wonderful plans, and then really rubbish resources, or resources that aren't age appropriate or that are uninspiring or copious. I can't tell you enough how important resources are for me as a teacher, and using variety. I know we're going to write a whole blog about resources, so watch out for that next month, but you know, it's so important.
They are important, and I'm going to sort of hold my hands up here and declare an interest, but obviously at Cornerstones, I mean, we have a very stringent process for identifying and developing resources, which I won't go into, but other than us, of course, where else would you advise teachers to look for resources, particularly online? Because I think that's where most people would look these days.
I know. I think just take it back a bit. Rather than think lesson resources and quick sort of worksheets, that kind of thing, actually, you know, hopefully with a more of a sequence in mind, you then are in charge of looking at the most established and, you know, trustworthy providers. People like, I use a lot the BBC website, their documentaries, the notes from the TV programmes, there's all sorts of stuff on there, and it's, you know, there's good provenance there. It's trustworthy. Also, all our fantastic museums and galleries, our heritage sites.
National Heritage is a good one, RSPB, those type of organisations.
Yeah, all the wildlife ones. A lot of the charitable ones are fantastic. They're well researched. They've got a team of experts behind them. So, you know, the facts of those trustworthy sites are right. There's so much on the internet. So, I'd say use fewer sites, use them well. And choose well, and then you can, you know, you can adapt. But I think the core knowledge, and we're trying to embed knowledge into children, it's got to be accurate and it's got to be well written.
Well, we've had quite an exhaustive look there at coherent curriculum. Who knew we'd get that much out of it? But I think probably next week we will be looking sort of more in depth at the real sort of practical steps for achieving that, right from how you agree on your curriculum vision and your pedagogy. So thank you for today.
You're welcome.
And until next week, we'll say goodbye to our listeners. So thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
And that's it for this episode of The Curriculum. You can subscribe to the podcast in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or iPad. Or if you have an Android device, you can try something like Pocket Casts. It means you get the episodes going straight to your phone or tablet, and you can discover a whole world of other podcasts out there. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell someone about it. Just send them a quick email or give them a nudge in person. If you want to know more about Cornerstones, the curriculum, as in the Cornerstones curriculum, and other products, you can go to cornerstoneseducation.co.uk, and you can learn more about this show, including how to subscribe, at cornerstoneseducation.co.uk/podcast. And we'd love to hear your feedback and any ideas you might have for the show. Just get in touch by emailing podcasts@cornerstoneseducation.co.uk or drop us a line on Twitter, where we are cornerstonesedu. That's it. Speak to you next time.